go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! You know, I just said a couple of minutes ago, in response to Carol Baker, Queen of the Minions, pre-show post, it shouldn't be this easy. Really, it shouldn't. But I've just been reading stuff all day long, and it's like somebody's trying to write the program for us. You know how... I mean, we've got an embarrassment of riches for this Moran Monday on the Horn. It is the seventh day of December 2015. And I got to thinking, let's see, it's a troop of baboons, a murder of crows, a gaggle of geese. What would it be for Morans? And the best I could come up with is a slapstick of morans. Yeah, no kidding. And every time I thought I had a lead, bang. So, this was like some sort of quirky NASCAR race where everybody got to be in the lead for 5 minutes or something. Or maybe it's like the Republican... Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Forgot about that part. I so often do. But God almighty... We're up to our armpits in morans, yeah. So by all means, I suppose we should probably get started lest we run out of program in which to feature and otherwise highlight these idiots, yeah. A couple of general notes. I welcome you to run over to the headonradionetwork.com chat room. It's under at headonradionetwork.com/chat room. And there you can pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and zippity doo dah, you will be in there and conversating before you know what happened. Mm-hmm. And also, you'll be part of the multimedia real-time extravaganza, madcap that it is, that takes place in the Horn chat room. Folks wandering in now as we speak, good evening to longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderators Lottie and Sparky, as well as to Jug of Punch. Good evening, good evening, good evening. Yeah, the topic you'll see when you go into the chat room is Unleash the Morans, and, well, I don't think they've ever been on a leash. This is amazing. Just the last few days. And, also, this is a listener-supported radio network. We try to raise $200 every evening to keep the bills paid, and there was some significant bill paying went on between Friday and today, and there's a whole bunch more that's got to be addressed. So hopefully we'll stay happily where we need to be. And, you know, 10 at 20, 20 at 10... You know how it works. The PayPal interface is at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute. You go there, you click, you'll see. And, you know, we're looking for subscribers pursuant to Joan's request of a couple of 3 weeks back. We're trying to actually get to 4,000. Yeah, we'd be out there pricing the blue Buicks with that. No, 400 subscribers at $10 a month. And we're not quite to 100, but we're getting there a little bit at a time, a little bit at a time, a little bit at a time. And I thank you, everyone, who has signed up for one of those. Mm-hmm. Let's see. So anyway, and there's just a little box if you want to put 10 bucks and make it a recurring contribution. That's how the subscriptions work. And I think it'll be this coming weekend, we're just going to sit down and do a mass mailing of bumper stickers, and all subscribers get bumper stickers. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So that's how that works. Now, like I said, there's a profusion, and I think we'd best get after it, because these morons aren't gonna nominate themselves. They'll do other things to themselves, but not nominate. You get the idea.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up. It is a show the likes of which you have never before seen. You may have seen the occasional Moran Carnival come through town from time to time, but this is the biggest, the baddest, the bestest that ever there was. It's Moran Monday on the Horn. Yes, indeed, yes, indeed. You can't tell the Morans without a program, and this is the program that tells the Morans. You just can't tell them much. Indeed, indeed. For less than 17 cents per program, this here program, well, it'll give you all you could ever possibly want in the way. It's like a National Geographic for Morans, only on radio. Oh, indeed, indeed, indeed. An advisory goes out that behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvasware resides all manner of birchers, booger eaters, birthers, ninthers, deathers, tenthers, libertarians, republicans, all manner of moranity. Well, you want to hang on to your purses, your children, your pets, your wallets, and your European-style messenger bags, because the morons, being right-wingers and conservatives, can get grabby. Head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in morons. I'm so not kidding. This is astonishing. You think you got one, and it slithers away, and here comes another one before you can worry about the one that got away. How about we wander out to Phoenix, Arizona, Stan, shall we? Because, you know, we got guns in Merca. Guns. And we got gun shows. And we got it morons who go to gun shows. And this was a traveling gun show. Right, yeah, kind of like a traveling moran carnival, all gathered, pressed down, and shaken together, right? Yeah, this was the a traveling gun show called Crossroads of the West Gun Show. And it's not a show, okay? A gun show would be where you walked in, and there was all kinds of guns in cases under glass, and you went, why, goodness me, look at that arquebuse from the 15th century. Mm-hmm. But that's not what this is. No. What a lovely little lady's derringer, just tiny enough to fit in her bustle. No. Gun shows are actually gun hustling flea markets. That's what they. Yeah, they're gun flea markets. And no more nor no less is Crossroads of the West Gun Show, the largest in the West. Okay. Mm-hmm. It was so large it was taking place at the Arizona State Fairgrounds over the weekend past, and it's just like going to. What is it, PetSmart or Pet Zone or whatever the big box pet store is, where they actually let you bring your kitty cat or your doggy into the store properly leashed, and they got treats for them there and everything. And
Well, that's the same thing with the Crossroads of the West gun show. You can bring your own gun. Yep, brr. Cause freedom. Wolverines! Right? Sure. Bring your gun. But not only can you bring your gun, you can buy you some guns. And there ain't going to be no big green chick, and nobody's going to look twice at you. I mean, if you walk in there looking all Muslim-y, they ain't going to. You got the purchase price there, Ahmed? I absolutely do. Okay, I'm going to sell you all the guns you want. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, that's how the right wing put thinks that, you know, it all goes down. But gun shows really work that way. I mean, you could walk in with a Death to America t-shirt and maybe, you know, a Confederate flag tattoo on both arms and one side of your neck, and the other side's got a tattoo that says, only God can judge me. And, yeah, and you buy all the damn, you could buy 100 guns, 200 guns. But in this particular instance, the moron in question only bought one. Now, bear in mind, they do put up a sign. It says, no loaded guns in the show. You can bring your gun with you, but you have to unload its freedom protecting bullets from it first. Maybe put them in your shirt pocket like Barney did. No more bullets? No more bullets. Oh. Yeah, that's supposed to be how it works. I mean, it's like, you know, before you go into Petco or whatever, and you walk faithful White Fang around till he goes poopy before you go in the store, because that's even, I mean, they expect it, they let Tom, but you know, it's embarrassing. So same thing with bullets in guns. So no loaded guns in the show. Wheel. It doesn't always work out the way we would like. No, police are investigating to find out exactly what happened. Because despite the statement from the purveyors of the Crossroads of the West gun show, the largest in the West, that your personal safety is our number one priority while you are at the show, they don't give a damn about your safety after you leave the show. I mean, after all, they just tried to sell you a gun, didn't they? Mm-hmm. So, Cletus, we'll call him Cletus, because he is one. Cletus goes to the Crossroads of the West gun show there at the Arizona State Fairgrounds in Phoenix. And he finds himself a semi-automatic pistol that just looks like it was made for him. Mm-hmm. And Cletus and his buddy Eustace were just all enamored over all the guns, because guns is sick, see? Especially if you've never actually had sex, and that's, you know, gun people. Well, unless you're a member of the House of Representatives from the state of Nevada, Stan, but more on that in a minute. My God, that photograph is burnt into my memory. What has been seen cannot be unseen. No. So Cletus and Eustace, Cletus buys himself a gun, because he's a freedom protector, Cletus is, because he never knows when the jackbooted government's going to want to put its jackbooted jackboots down on his freedom protecting, freedom loving neck right next to his Confederate flag tattoo. Mm-hmm. And he buys himself a gun, and he starts to checking it out, And you know, you get into some kind of weaselly language in these news stories, because the news story I've got from the New York Daily News, who is not a friend of the gun trade, says, when the gun went off. Just went off. Just happened. These things do just, well, happen. When the gun went off. Another story said, when a bullet fired from the gun. Now, unless we live in that world Carl Sagan described when he called it a demon-haunted world. That's the world that the religious fundamentalists, evangelicals, live in, where there's all kind of magic and hoodoo and demons and angels and magic. Did I mention and hoodoo? Yeah, I got the hoodoo in there too. And the stars and the rule and the planets and you know, something just behind your liver and right. Unless we live in that world, guns don't just go bang. Usually something has to happen to make them go bang. Like, say, you're a lovely, well-turned-out, well-dressed woman of a certain age meeting your woman girlfriend, buddy, of a certain age down there to the Starbucks in Florida, and your purse tips over on the ground, and you go, oh, my stars and garters. And before you can get it all the way out of your mouth, your freedom protector's falling out of your bag, and it goes bang because it lands on the hard pavement, the floor or whatever, and it shoots your buddy there, your latte sipping pal. It shoots her in the thigh, okay? Because then the act would be either the falling off or the landing on the pavement, the impact, and the firing pin and the percussion cap and the gabang, right? But everything that I can tell in this story tends to indicate that the gun was apparently possessed by a demon, because when the gun went off, striking the man's friend, that would be Eustace, in the torso, which I also find an interesting choice of words from KTRK, in the torso. I mean, in the belly, in the chest, in the back. Wait. Do the buttocks constitute part of the torso? Because maybe they just didn't want to print the word ass there on their TV station newsy page. But anyway, and I personally suspect he got shot in the buttocks, because the next line is, the victim was taken to a hospital and is expected to survive. Neither man has been identified. Yeah, except the fact that they just kind of got to be Cletus and Eustace, don't they? So I'm kind of at a loss here, because what they're trying to do is say that there was no, they're trying to infer that there was no fault on the part of the person handling the firearm, when that's almost the only way this thing could have gone off. But never mind the fact that the signs, all the weapons that was for selling and for protecting the Constitution and our precious way of life there was supposed to be unloaded. So somebody must have screwed up. But just the same, Cletus must have, unless there was a demon involved, or possibly an angel, pulled the trigger. They're squeezed. Right. Only these are kind of dodgy affairs, these gun shows, so, and they're very busy, and people milling around, and I mean, little five-year-olds going, Daddy, I want a bazooka! So it's kind of hard to know. But they really do. They try hard. I mean, they put up a sign that says, your personal safety is our number one priority. Right, because we talked about that. Oh, Nikki, I guess you could say, Nikki says, please tell me those names are made up. Well, they are, except for the fact that they're real names of real rednecks. I mean, there's Cletuses and Eustaces out there all over Merca. The greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever, indivisible, under God. Yeah. The gun show operators have not said much about what went down. They said, they just said, hey, we're still the biggest gun show in the Western U.S. And we don't really know exactly what happened. But, I mean, freedom, right? I mean, don't criticize us, because freedom. I mean, and Gerald has apparently knows from gun shows. He says why they got big guns and little guns and in the middle guns. Why, there's guns for every shape and size. You can get your gun in any color as well. Why, there's camo guns and black guns and purple guns and silver guns and pink guns and gold guns. And there's even orange guns. Yes, sir, you can get anything you want. Cash, Visa, MasterCard, Merkin Express, Discover cards accepted, no checks. Please, in God we trust, everyone else pays cash. Bango. Bango. Just go on down to the gun show and try not to get hit by none of them miracle bullets. Because, you know, sometimes guns just go off. Right. Right, 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 right. But like I said, we got oodles of these types of things today. Tons and tons. I mean, we're covered up in the damn things. Do you want proof? I got proof. Well, wait a minute. Roger up in Oregon says, so what's your point, Arizona gun shop? It was not a gun shop, Roger. It was a gun show. It was a gun fair. It was a firearms festival, okay? It wasn't just some lonely little store there. Sorry, sneezing frenzy. No. But Roger says, so what's your point? Do you think only Texas is entitled to have magic bullets? Oh, well played. Well played indeed, Roger. Let's leave Arizona stand, shall we? I know, it's hard to do, but we must. Now, what's with the damn sneezing? Let's leave Arizona stand and travel over to that land of freedom, Ohio stand, where people are still probably right chapped that the Ohio State University didn't get to participate in this year's college football playoffs and have a chance to defend its title. Nope. That'll be your Michigan State, and I know that Billable Rick is heartbroken, and I was heartbroken for him as I listen to the broadcast via TuneIn of the Iowa Hawkeye Radio Network with color commentary by Ed Podolak. Mm-hmm. See, I really did. And I was sitting there going, oh, no, this is not going to, oh, really? We're going to do this? Oh, shoot. I wanted Iowa in the in the playoffs, but oh, well. By the way, Steve in New York says, a gun show, otherwise known as Cirque du Moran. Amen. But anyway, we got to go to Ohio. Because, there's a county there, Pike County, Ohio. And the 911 dispatch this past Thursday evening got a call. Well, the sheriff's office got a call reporting, you know, another incident of freedom breaking out at a muzzle velocity somewhere, probably around, 2,000 feet per second. And it was Pike County Sheriff's Deputy Joel Jenkins. Joel Jenkins. I know, wrong accent. He said, there's been an accidental discharge at my house. My neighbor, he's down. You guys are going to have to get here ASAP. Mm-hmm. Well, what he didn't tell the dispatch was that he was the guy who accidentally discharged the firearm. He also did not mention that the bullet that exited the muzzle of the said firearm, probably somewhere around 2,000 feet per second, had entered the head and brain of his next-door neighbor. That would be 40-year-old Jason Brady. Police got there before the ambulance squad did, and they saved the ambulance squad some trouble, the EMTs, by going, yeah, he's dead. And it turned out that the Pike County Sheriff's Deputy Joel Jenkins was drunker than Adam's off ox. Yep, he was tanked. More on being tanked later, maybe. The Attorney General's Bureau of Criminal Investigation arrested Sheriff's Deputy Joel Jenkins after he admitted to accidentally shooting his neighbor while showing off the firearm. Yeah, look here. I got me a good bang. Damn. Because, see, the gun went off. No. Apparently, Sheriff's Deputy Joel Jenkins accidentally and negligently fired the gun. And then there's a difference. There really is. He is now facing a felony charge of involuntary manslaughter and apparently was transported to the Franklin County, Ohio jail, right? Pike County Prosecutor Rob Junk, no, really, said, we are alleging Deputy Jenkins was using a weapon whilst intoxicated. When someone does that and causes death, that is a felony. Well, surprise, surprise, surprise. They're probably already casting his Freedom Protection Award and Gun Owner Persecution Certificate out there at NRA headquarters, I have no doubt. But at least until there's some form of formal adjudication, Sheriff's Deputy Joel Jenkins is on paid leave. Yes. He's on paid administrative leave from the Sheriff's Department of Pike County. And, well, he's kind of good at that whole being on paid administrative leave thing, because he was on paid administrative leave earlier because he used his Freedom Protector to deprive Robert Rooker of his life. Robert Rooker was 26 years old at the time he ran afoul of Pike County Sheriff's Deputy Joel Jenkins, who presumably was even sober when he did that. So he's going to continue to draw a check. He's not going to have to do any policing. Thank you. And you know what? He may not even have to give up any firearms. Except the one that, you know, it went off. Because guns do that. But here we have two perfect examples supporting my argument in favor of mandatory firearm insurance. Now, I've known some folks who had an absolute house full of firearms. You know, collectors had their federal firearms license and exquisitely etched and beautiful woodwork, you know, real honest-to-God Belgian Browning shotguns that cost $30,000 a piece and whatnot. And you know what those folks do? They list by serial number, make, and model every one of those firearms on their insurance, their homeowners, not in case they shoot anybody with them, because they're not going to. They're not going to take those things out and use them. Those are collector's pieces. And they only appreciate in value because firearms in certain parts of this country are more fungible and more of a liquid asset than goddamn gold. Okay? But they list them on a rider on their homeowner's insurance policy so that they can have specific coverage in case they are stolen. So it is not like the insurance industry is unfamiliar with the idea of firearms. What we desperately need, however, is insurance coverage for people who insist on going walkabout with their firearms. I didn't mean to, but I kind of made Agnes hoot like a barn owl over the weekend because I read her this, I read her this post I'd seen from like Arlington, Texas or somewhere, where they said, "Now, we're having our Christmas parade on Saturday, and we would just simply like to very politely ask, because after all, Christmas parades are for the children. We would like to very politely ask our open carry advocates to please not open carry at the Christmas parade, but instead go to concealed carry today instead for the children." No, I'm not kidding. I try not to get in flame wars on Facebook, but on that occasion, I had to make an exception, and I said, "Here's a good idea. How about everybody who actually loves their children keep their children away from that parade where all you freakish gun people are going to be?" I don't know where the sneezing's coming from. What did it? Oh, well. But, I mean, because, Jesus, Christmas parades? And you have to ask the open carry goobers ever so politely to please not terrorize the children with your Second Amendment freedom protectors, okay? Yeah. So that's Ohio, Texas, and Arizona. Oh, my. We have a veritable... And then, of course, it was, what, last night, yes? When President Obama took to the airwaves to try to pat America's collective hands and help the evangelical fundamentalist amosexuals and various and sundry other assorted birchers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, baggers and booger eaters and libertarians and Republicans understand that just because someone happens to be Muslim doesn't mean that they're always a bad person. And that, in fact, most Muslims, just like most any other human being, they're good people. And not to flip them out. And the right wing necessarily went absolutely, sprayed roach crazy. And apparently it just got too much for retired Lieutenant Colonel Ralph Peters. Mm-hmm. Who was called onto Fox to speak with Stuart Vaughn, who was a wild-eyed right-wing POS. And he didn't like that one in our White House of speechifying about not hating on the Muslims. Not one little bit, Ralph Peters didn't. Not one little itty-bitty bit. No, sir.
Going up. Let's get right to the President's speech last night on terrorism and bring in Lieutenant Colonel Ralph Peters. Right, Ralph, I have a question for you. I know you watched last night. I want to know, what were you saying to the TV as the President was speaking? What was your commentary as this, as the President's speech unfolded?
And you know what I love about that question? Stuart Varney already knows that the guy he's talking to is one of those yahoos who screams at the television. But then again, he's on Fox. They're all screamers at television, aren't they? But you're going to, more in Monday. Hockey puck. Hockey puck warning. Couple of extra strips of duct tape for this one, folks.
Well, first of all, he keeps speaking about, we can't give in to our fears. Don't be afraid. Look, Mr. President, we're not afraid. We're angry. We're pissed off. We're furious.
Yes.
We want you to react. We want you to do something. You're afraid. I mean, this guy is such a total pussy. It's stunning. And, you know, we want the people, the American people, whom he does not know in any intimate sort of manner. We want action. We want action against Islamic State. And then, when the president is telling us, you know, he is going to destroy ISIS. This is a president who has done more harm to American police departments than he has done to Islamic State. This is a president who restrains our military. He uses it not to defeat ISIS, but for political purposes, for political cover.
You stop bobbing your head, buddy. We can't get a good bead with the Thorazine dart blowgun. But you got that, right? I mean, professional journalism over at Fox. Mm-hmm. Really? This is a... And I'm surprised. Why? You know, it's always middle school over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. It's always seventh grade.
He's a total pussy.
I'd take you a little more seriously, Lieutenant Colonel Ralph Peters, if you sounded a little, I don't know, maybe if you had a little goddamn bass in your voice.
Now,
But no. And Stuart Varney was completely put off, absolutely put off. I mean, after all, I'm a member of Fox News, after all. Right, old chap? Yes, absolutely.
I want to hurt our enemies. This is a president who cares more about thugs in Guantanamo or thugs in Ferguson, Missouri, than he does about law-abiding American citizens and their right to live in safety and peace.
I can tell you are super angry, and I asked you what your reaction was, but I got a call. You can't use language like that.
No, you can't use language like that. This is censored broadcast television. I may very well be fined $475,000 for that pussy you just did. Absolutely. And of course, I find genital-based insults to just be the height of stupidity, except for the occasional time when we need to check in with Professor Spicoli.
You dick!
Right, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But you can't say I'm not writing a check for $475,000 because you said that.
The program, okay? I'm sorry. Okay, accept that. Now, moving on. What was new in the president's presentation last night? Was there anything? Was there anything in his presentation last night which would make a contribution to defeating ISIS or erasing our fears? Anything?
No, I mean, with the New York Times, he's convinced that the problem is gun control. That's what we got to fix. And the problem's Islamist terror.
Can't it be both? Please, I mean, a little bit. Can't the guns be a little bit of the problem? I mean, apparently we have magic guns at gun shows in Arizona that just go off. I mean, read all the damn reports right there. They just went off. I remember a couple of decades back, what was it, when Audi had a problem with automobiles spontaneously accelerating. And you know what? There was a monumental damn recall to fix every last one of the. I mean, Volkswagen just recalled about every car it made since the plant was put in at Wolfsburg, and over you know, diesel emissions. But apparently, firearms in this country just go off. You don't have to pull the trigger. You don't have to. I mean, they just bang with a hard look, right? Yeah. So gun no, the problem's Islamic terrorism. But how terrorizing would the Islamics be? Islamic, if say they couldn't get firearms. I mean, for instance, just for instance, one of the things that we have learned of late, like as in over the weekend, is how those how the killers, the man, the American-born, religiously motivated, driven, well, whatever, killer, because he was an American man with easy access to firearms. That's the bottom line on that. But no.
It has been reported, according to the L.A. Times, who reviewed the FBI inventory of Syed Farouk and his wife Tashfeen Malik, and they found out that among the items that the FBI, items that would be guns, found in the apartment, you know, before the for-profit media went stampeding through, were two weapons invoices from a place called, a website called Cheaper Than Dirt and Bud's Gun Shop. Come on down to Bud's Gun Shop. You betcha. Gonna have a free, we'll give you a free gun cleaning kit and a box of Band-Aids with every firearm purchased here at Bud's Gun Shop. Mm-hmm. Nope. The Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, which is probably, well, I mean, we'd all be so much better off, the Republicans will tell you, if we could just get rid of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, right? And the Bureau of Land Management out there harassing that poor, upstanding, God-fearing, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, Kolob patriot, Cloven Bundy. Mm-hmm. Forcing him to bring people in to point guns at Bureau of Land Management. Right. No, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms said that every single one of the firearms that was used by the shooters, owned by the shooters, was purchased, and this is an important term here, legally in the United States of America. The greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever, under God, indivisible. Because freedom. Mm-hmm. Every one of them. Every weapon. And in particular, Bud's Gun Shop, they're very particular about the fact that they want to make it easy for people in California to buy firearms quick and simple. On their website there at Bud's Gun Shop, Bud's Death Emporium, they say, "We have dedicated an entire category of our website to help you get the firearms you need." Do you hear that, Tashfeen? They have dedicated an entire part of their website to help us get the firearms we need. Allahu Akbar! Mm-hmm. So, I mean, at least it's not a mystery, right? At least we know that there weren't any AK-47s coming over in violin cases from Rafalka, Syria, or wherever it is that the ISIS has set up shops, and they're not just mailing guns to people over here. Because no. If you want to mail guns in the United States, you've got to mail them within the United States. But you can do that. You can absolutely do that. Mail them all over the country. Mm-hmm. Right. Oh, it goes on and on and on. But that's where we are. When I see stories like this, I try to think back to the reign of error. I try to think back to the days of Dim Leader. And yes, I still refer to him as Dim Leader. Molly Ivins, may she rest in peace, referred to him as Shrub, son of Bush. Our dear friend Mike Malloy refers to him as Raisin Brain. But did every... No. Well, I mean, you couldn't call him what Colonel Peters called him. And thank you, Goddess of Irony, for giving us Colonel Peters to call someone a... Right there. Well, I'll just get another one of those rubber chickens out of the box. We keep them stocked here, and we'll sacrifice it to you shortly after midnight, if that's all right, your majestic, noble graciousness. Peters. Oh, sometimes it's fun just to be, you know. Yeah, never mind. So, I mean, do you see what I mean? I couldn't keep up this weekend. One right after the other. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's wander down to Texas for a minute. It was just over this past weekend that a couple of Muslim women, Leila Abdinabi and Sirat Al-Nahi, wanted to go and have lunch on Sunday at a place in Austin that's fairly popular with the locals called Kirby Lane Cafe. See, she should have gone to that awesome vegetarian restaurant that Dr. Allen took me to. It maybe wouldn't have happened. But no, they just had to go to the Kirby Lane Cafe, where one friend went into the restaurant. That would be Sirat. And Sirat, by the time Leila got back, Sirat was crying and upset because while Leila was parking, some good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered Christian, because, you know, they are, Merkin man sitting next to her said, the way Leila described it, said some things about my driving and that I should just go back to Saudi Arabia. And then he asked Sirat Al-Nahi, "Have you got a gun? Yeah, you don't like what I'm saying. Maybe you should just shoot me." Sirat Al-Nahi said on Facebook, "I literally couldn't believe he said that, and I asked him to repeat what he had just said. I couldn't believe what he had said, and I guess I hoped someone would have the humanity to acknowledge it, because their silence hurt just as much as his words. But that's the whole thing." The entire restaurant sat there within earshot, hearing this, and was as silent as the tomb. Mm-hmm. Eventually, the host who had seated them made what was described as a pathetic attempt to de-escalate the situation by seating the man, but the damage had been done. Sirat Al-Nahi went on to write, "They chose to seat the racist guy who just made a girl cry right in front of them rather than us. When we spoke to the management, they basically said they were sorry it happened, but they really couldn't do anything." And then Leila said, "As we were leaving, I told the people watching, just so you know, we were told racist things, and this restaurant doesn't feel the need to address it, because who cares about us?" And then another white guy in the restaurant hollered, "Nobody!" Sirat Al-Nahi said, "We left because it was true." And her friend said, "No one else said or did anything. And that's what makes these experiences 1,000 times worse, is the people just sit silently watching." Mm-hmm. It eventually did filter upstairs to corporate, who immediately issued a stern statement. "We do not condone discriminatory comments or behavior in any way, shape, or form, except when we do. And according to our policy, the guest who made these hateful comments to another guest should have been asked to leave our restaurant, but wasn't because he's white. This was a mistake made by our management, and they'll probably make it several times more. And we are addressing it with the individual. For anyone who has any concerns about Kirby Lane's policies, please contact us directly or at social@klcmail.com. Mm-hmm. I added a couple of things in there. But these were hateful comments to another guest, and we're going to, but you know what? The horse is about 2.5 miles gone, but you know what we're going to do right now? We're going to close the barn doors. because we're responsive at Kirby Lane. Who here wants a bleach shower? I want a shower in bleach. I really, really do. But that's most every day, isn't it? Oh, I mentioned the firearm. Well, never mind. I mean, what does that even mean in America anymore? I mentioned the firearm thing. That just means I mentioned someday in Merca. Somewhere, somehow. Out in Nevadistan, there is a member of the House of Representatives named Michelle Fiore. I'm assuming there's an accent ague over the E. Maybe it's just Fiore, F-I-O-R-E. Fire! There we go. That's the one. She has issued her annual Christmas card, and it is charming. I mean, it is absolutely darling. It is, truly. Because all them little Fiores is there, and everybody's wearing some kind of red T-shirt. Uh-huh. And she's a member of the Nevada Assembly, I guess, because she's referred to as a assemblywoman. She says, Christmas is a family affair. I think getting a firearm as a present and giving firearms as presents is a great present. And I think, again, I don't think you thought in the first place, lady, because Christmas is a family affair, I think our ultimate responsibility is protect and make sure our family is safe. And that's why their Christmas card has practically every child, every human being in it, holding a gun. Now, Michelle Fiore in particular, she's holding herself a small pistol grip assault style shotgun. Mm-hmm. But the best part is the little 5-year old feller in front of her who's standing there holding a 9mm pistol, a real one, not a toy one, but a real one. And people began to question Grandma Michelle's brains. Mm-hmm. For letting a 5-year old have a firearm. And she said, if you look at that picture real close, you'll see his finger is not on the trigger. That 5-year-old grandson of mine has total trigger control. What? And I guess that's what they were lacking out in Arizona, was some trigger control. And maybe that's what Pike County Sheriff's Deputy Joel Jenkins was a lacking once he got all properly good and liquored up, with some trigger control. Mm-hmm. I mean, just last night we were in the laundry room doing laundry, and I said, hey, Jake, what does Eddie the Eagle say? What do you do when you see a gun? And he spouted it out, the songs and stuff, so, you know, he got it. You know it. I mean, you've heard that parody sort of comedy Christmas Carol. Merry Christmas from the Family, Robert Earl Keen. Mm-hmm. Here we go. Yeah. This, I think. No, damn it. I do not want Windows 10. Go the hell away. Live version.
Mom got drunk and Dad got drunk at our Christmas party. We were drinking champagne punch and homemade eggnog. Little sister brought. Sang Feliz
Feliz Navidad, Feliz Navidad. Brother Ken brought his kids with him, the three from his first wife Lynn, and the two identical twins from his second wife Marinette. Of course he brought his new wife Kay. He talks all about AA, chain smoking while the stereo plays Noel, Noel, the first Noel. Caught the turkey, turned the ball game on. Mixed margaritas when the eggnog's gone. Send somebody to the quick pack store. We need some ice and an extension cord. A can of bean dip and some Diet Rides. A box of tampons, some Marlboro Lights. Hallelujah, everybody say cheese. Merry Christmas from the family.
You get the idea. Well, talking about photographs on a radio program is a lot like dancing about architecture, but just the same. Well, I just had Grandma Michelle, I just had a vision of Grandma Michelle dipping into that homemade eggnog, and then what a lovely time they're all going to have when they start passing around their packages and opening up all their brand new Christmas firearms. Ain't it special? A note from Gerald. Bob, I only used two Bobs there, Ron. Pay attention. You know as well as I do, there will be absolutely no gun legislation coming from this Congress. I mean, even if the Senate could muster up enough courage to pass a bill, I'm certain that it would be DOA upon the gerrymandered to death House floor. And that's absolutely the truth, because, I mean, of all the possible gun legislation out there, the one that probably makes more sense than anything else is this notion that maybe if you're already on the terrorist watch list, and granted, they do make mistakes. But if you're already on the terrorist watch list, maybe you ought not be able to legally purchase firearms in the new 90 states of America. Maybe. I mean, I heard that. I thought, well, okay. I mean, granted, this is, but terrorist watch list. All right. I guess we're going to have those in the 21st century. I mean, we've always had a modicum of control over who we have formally and officially let into the new United States of America. Even when it was just handwritten lists, or even when it was just, if you coughed right, you didn't get off Ellis Island and you got put back on a boat, back to the old country, you and your tuberculosis, or whatever. But no. Apparently that piece of incredibly simple, sane, legislative notionalizing ain't enough, or it's too much, or it's wrong, or Jesus doesn't like it, or I can't possibly say that and still remain a presidential candidate. And granted, a GOP Republican, right-wing, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered Ohio Governor John Kasich and former Fox News TV Radio Rwanda commentator, he ain't got much of a presidential campaign left, and it used to be that he was ballyhooed as being the sane Republican, right? The one that the middle of the roaders could kind of go, well, yeah, I mean, all right, maybe if that's what I mean, possibly, okay. I mean, he did expand Medicaid and stuff, and he's not all the time hooting about Mexicans. Okay, well, no. They invited him on State of the Union, on the Chicken Noodle News,
where he was interviewed by Jake Tapper. And who knew? I didn't. But who knew that something as plain and simple as not letting people who are on the terrorist watch list buy freaking guns, who knew that that was a, that was going to spell the doom of Merkin freedom? Because I didn't. Did you?
I want to ask you about something that President Obama and Democrats in the Senate have been pushing for, whether or not people who are on these terror watch lists or no-fly lists should be allowed to purchase firearms or explosives. The bill that would ban them was voted down Thursday in the Senate. How would you have voted on that bill?
Well, Jake, on the no-fly list, we probably could keep them from getting guns and ought to ban them. But on the watch list, I can tell you that even in our state, when we stop somebody, when our law enforcement stops somebody who's on the watch list, we don't tell them they're on the watch list. We want to make sure that we can exploit all the information that we can possibly get. So if all of a sudden you tell everybody who's on the watch list that you can't do this or that, then guess what happens? Then we lose our ability to track. We lose our ability to gather information. So I think we have to be careful. Of course, it makes common sense to say that if you're on a terrorist watch list, you shouldn't be able to go out and get a gun, although you will be able to get it illegally. But what we have to deal with is the fact that we don't want to tip somebody off that they're under review and that we could be gathering critical information to disrupt the plot. I mean, all of this is about having the information to disrupt. Not about, that's what the intelligence business is all about, because once...
God damn it, Tapper, why'd you have to ask me that question? How am I ever going to get great big bucketfuls of money from the NRA, even though it's soaked in blood? How am I ever going to get great big bucketfuls of blood-soaked money from the NRA if you're asking me to sit here and say it'd be all right to stop terrorists from buying guns, and that, and you know, terrorists are Americans, too? I mean, I love the NRA. If they ever dig him up, I wanna just smolik all over the hand and possibly the face of dead old Charlton Heston and his moldy brow. I do. I love the NRA. I just love it, love it, love it.
It happens. We know how tragic it is. So what we have to do is make sure we do disrupt. We just arrested somebody like 3 weeks ago who was in Akron who pledged loyalty to ISIS.
Right.
We have to know who they are. So let's just balance this in terms of what is in the best interest of gathering intelligence and keeping us safe.
But let me just game this out. So somebody's on the terror watch list.
Yes, Jake Tapper, do. Game this out. Because you know what? You're sitting there. You're making $1 million a goddamn year at Chicken Noodle News, running your little head mouth on the TV on Sundays. Let's just game this out, because that's all it is. It's a game. Somebody call the grieving families in San Bernardino and tell them to shut the up, because Jake Tapper says it's a game.
You dick!
Yeah.
It's not the no-fly list where they would already know. They're on the terror watch list, and so they're being surveilled. They go in to buy an AR-15, and you think that that person should be able to get it because you don't want to tip them off that they're on a terror watch list?
Well, what I think, Jake, is I think we have to be careful in the way we do this. Look, everybody wants to get a slick little answer and 100% answer. As governor of Ohio, I have to sit down with people who are very knowledgeable in a whole variety of ways. And then we look at it and we try to figure out what is the common sense solution. So if there is a practical way to limit it, yes, but I think we also have to weigh it off against our ability to surveil. So some of these things, just like the issue of encryption, for example, the technology companies are very concerned that if you give a gateway into the area of encryption, people could then, the other people could go in and begin to hack those people. So you have to sit down and you have to figure things out.
No. See, John Kasich, there's a difference. That word, I don't think it means what you think it means, hack. Okay? There's a difference between letting a person on the terrorist watch list buy an AK-47 or an AR-15 or a ZJQ-612 and shoot up a Christmas luncheon. There's a difference between that
and hacking. Okay, hacking is not actually people hacking on other people. It's a computer, kind of nerdy computer term. It doesn't involve any meat cleavers or anything like that, John Kasich. Apparently, you're not, I mean, you're not hip or something. I don't know.
Campaigns don't always lend themselves to reasonable discussions, but as a leader, as a CEO that's run a state, the seventh largest state in the country, you look at a problem and you try to figure out unique ways to solve it. And so this is something that has to be considered from many different sides so we don't make a big mistake again.
Well, you know, the big mistake of not letting potential terrorists purchase, you know, firearms. Big mistake. Big mistake. I mean, you might tip them off, and then they would go, "Oh no, they know I'm a terrorist." Or actually, if we want to use the right dialect, they'd say, "Oh no, they know I must be a terrorist." Because in the case of Saeed Farouk and Tashfeen Malik, can I just reiterate one itsy bitsy tiny little microscopic fact here? They were both lawful gun owners. Now, granted, it does turn out that Syed Farouk's daddy says that he was obsessed with Israel and the Palestinians, and daddy says, you know, I told him just wait. Violence is not the way, I told him, but he did not listen. Okay. But regardless of what his thinking was, up until the moment that they began scattering death all over that meeting room, Syed Farouk, American-born citizen, and his Pakistani via Saudi Arabia, our partners in peace, wife, Tashfeen Malik, were law-abiding citizens. Yep. They were the classic example of what I call the lawful gun owner. And I always put, the way I spell that, I put parenthesis, capital L, close parenthesis, capital A, then W-F-U-L, gun owner. Because they go from being lawful to awful in the space that it takes for the trigger to be pulled backwards, causing the firing pin to strike. Yeah, you know. And out, and bang goes the gun. Yeah, one would be hard pressed to find a firearm that was involved in a crime that was not at some point in time a part of the lawful stream of commerce in the United States of America. But I'm at least grateful to John Kasich for showing us exactly how screwed up the NRA has made our country. And screwed up it most assuredly is. Heartbreakingly so. I love the things that you guys pick up on. A note from Kim in New York City. Okay, one of the weirder expressions I've ever heard, Adam's off ox. Okay, the first time I heard the phrase, I don't know you from Adam's off ox, was in It's a Wonderful Life, said to George Bailey by Nick the bartender, get me, I'm giving out wings. I've seen that movie, I don't know it 25 times or so, and I still don't know what it means. Then today I heard you use it, can you please explain it? I don't know if I can. Adam gets ascribed a lot of stuff ascribed to him. He apparently had a cat. Because, you know, I don't know you from Adam's house cat. Adam, I always took Adam's off ox to be the, Isn't there an off and an on when you're plowing? Or maybe Adam's off ox is the one that's in the stable, or in the barn, while the on ox is out plowing. I don't know. Drunkard and Adam's off ox. Don't know you from Adam's off ox. I think we have a linguistic inquiry here that's going to require some research. Meanwhile, Robert in Australia wants to know, why is it alcohol, tobacco, and firearms? Why does the U.S. have a Bureau for Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms? Apart from the already demonstrated deaths and injury you get when you combine alcohol and firearms, I just don't see the connection. It's two legal drugs and guns. Shouldn't it be one Bureau for Alcohol, Tobacco, and other drugs, and one Bureau for Firearms and other deadly weapons? I'm not aware of any other country in the world that has such a Bureau, and they probably don't. But doesn't ATF go back? Doesn't that go back to the Prohibition era? Because alcohol and tobacco and firearms are all supposedly, and were once upon a time, now not so much on the firearms part, highly regulated substances. And so, you know, if you want to make it the Department of Illegal Drugs, well, that would be your DEA, your Drug Enforcement Administration agency, whatever. But ATF goes back to things that were highly regulated, and if outside those regulations were illegal, hence alcohol, moonshine, tobacco, again, illicitly traded tobacco, black market tobacco, and, of course, firearms, because, well, firearms are easy to get in this country, and they're easily transferable. And the next thing you know, somebody can be arming up their own private army. It's, what's that phrase Dim Leader used to use? Uniquely American, right? Ron in Raleigh says, are a lot of my fellow Hordenistas skating real close to the edge of gimmick infringement? I know it has a certain je ne sais pas. Well, I mean, I think that's exactly what Gerald did. Bob, but no third Bob. I mean, it's within the letter and spirit of the rule, Ron. I mean, we just have to deal with it. And Ron points out, and I was thinking about this too, Ted Kennedy was on the no-fly list, and they wouldn't tell him why. Well, I think that was just a matter of George W. screwing with him because the Bushes envisioned themselves as a sort of Republican Kennedy family, minus the, you know, actual desire to do public service. Okay, there's our answer. Queen of the Minions, Carol Baker, says, Adam's off ox. The idiom is an old-fashioned variation of the general comment, I don't know him from Adam, meaning you don't know this person at all. Other variations have mentioned Adam's house cat, Adam's brother, Adam's foot, and other things that you don't know at all. Regarding the off ox quoted from the link above, the off ox was the one on the off side of the vehicle. If you stood behind the team looking towards it, it was the one on the right-hand side. The driver walked on the left-hand side of the team with the near-side ox at his right shoulder. He would get to know the personality and idiosyncrasies of this ox very well. However, the off ox was hidden behind the near-side one and was yoked to it so that it could do nothing but follow it, so the off ox was figuratively at least less well-known. And there we have it. We got name me another radio program where we're going to learn that kind of thing. And Marty inquiring, has it been refuted that the male shooter, Syed Farouk, not remembering names right now, Marty said, that's my job, Marty, had an argument with someone in the holiday party? If so, it sounds more like the guy and his wife went postal instead of committed an act of terrorism. He kind of does, except for the fact that now they've been digging and digging and digging. And, yeah, she went on Facebook and said, I pledge allegiance to the ISIS. Right. Wrong accent, I know. And that and his dad has commented that, yes, his son was deeply obsessed with Israel. So the pissed off at the holiday party kind of thing. Out the window. Back to the gun show. And I think we're going to have to, we're going to have an inquiry into some Australian colloquialisms here. Robert writes, "Fair suck on the pineapple donut, Bob." Oh, come on. They put up a sign there at the gun show, didn't they? Don't bring loaded guns in. What more do you expect them to do? Check every gun on display? I think Robert's being a little bit facetious there. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, they were kind of legally required to, but oh well. Fair suck on the pineapple donut. Pineapple donut actually probably sounds kind of tasty. I'll have to get on the line to Krispy Kreme and see what they can do. In regard to Adam's house cat, Michael in Madison reminds us, "I can't help with Adam's off ox, but I'm reminded that Adam's house cat was the name of Cooley and Hood's first band back in the 80s. The duo later performed as Virgil Kane, the tastefully named Horse Pussy, then finally as the band we all know and love today, the Drive-By Truckers." Absolutely. And Kim says, "Thanks, Bob and Carol, for answering my question." Well, I'm merely the messenger. You can thank Carol for all of that. Oh, and you know what? I needed just a little bit of a turnaround for a little bit of a breather here, because we haven't even scratched the damn surface. We have not scratched the surface of Moran Monday. And what does that say? And then, of course, yes, absolutely. Gerald points out, "You don't know shit from Shinola." Shinola was a shoe polish. Exactly. That one I did know. Mm-hmm. Colder than a well digger's ass. That one's pretty self-explanatory, if a bit visual. Then there are the various references to practitioners of the dark arts and their brassieres. Also self-explanatory, I guess. So let's take a little break. If you want to jump into the conversation, you are more than welcome to. You know the phone numbers, right? Area code 304-574-8178. 304-574-8178. That's line one. Skype to Skype is Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. And then, of course, there's always the stress line. 304-663-HORN. 304-663-4676. Named in honor of the one and only Bill Mr. Stress Miller. And anyway, fine by me, because it is, after all, conversation radio, right? Yeah. All right, then, let's take a break. We try to raise $200 every evening. Thank you. Thank you very kindly. We are at 150 to go. So, much obliged. Much obliged indeed. More to come. This is The Horn. Yeah, I'm Bob Kincaid. 23 minutes past the hour on this Moran Monday on the Horn for the 7th day of December 2015. The 7th day of December, a day which will live in infamy. Oddly enough, we don't say that about, that day in August when we became the first and only country in the world to use nuclear weapons for a military purpose. But that was pretty infamous, too. But no, this is December 7th. This is Pearl Harbor Day. Note coming in from Tim from L.A. The subject line, NRA is making Republicans stupid, morons. You'll notice, Tim says, that none of the media stressed the dangers of firearms in both attacks, but one side are Muslim terrorists, and the other is a disturbed old man? Yeah. Which is along the lines of something that I said on Facebook, or the Twitters, too, for that matter. Namely, that in giving his litany of terrorist attacks, President Obama mentioned Boston and Chattanooga and San Bernardino, but he didn't mention Charleston, South Carolina, or Colorado Springs, Colorado. Which means that as long as we continue to see terrorism as something those people do with that skin, then we're going to continue to have mass murders perpetrated by good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, Christian, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexuals. Right. Tim continues, nothing really about how easy it is to get a firearm. California is the toughest gun control state in the nation, and the Republicans say, well, if gun control really worked, why was there a shooting in San Bernardino? Then our governor said something that counters the comment. Nevada and Arizona are the backdoor states for terrorists, and terrorists can legally buy firearms banned in California and do their terror in our state, which is absolutely true. It's the same thing, it's the same problem that Chicago has. You know, every time there's a mass shooting in this country, some right-winger goes on Fox News TV and Radio Rwanda and says, yeah, well, what about your Chicago? Why aren't we talking about your problem with your gunfire Negroes in Chicago? And then if you try to do that, well, we find out how quickly their argument falls apart, because Chicago is awash in guns because of Wisconsin and southern Illinois and neighboring, Indiana, Taliban-diana, where, you know, they don't want no homosexuals, but they sure do want some goons. Mm-hmm. And so it's one of those issues that proves that, you know, we are not 50 little individual nations, that actions in one state have profound impacts in another. I mean, as I've noted, people come down, and they do, they come straight down I-77. Or as you would say out west, they come straight down the 77, and because it just comes right down through Ohio and bang, right into West Virginia. Then the next thing you know, you're in Charleston. And apparently they like Huntington because it's over there close to Kentucky, and it's real easy to get guns in Kentucky, too. And they buy guns and guns and guns and guns and guns, and they get the money to buy the guns by bringing down some heroin to sell. Or some pills. Hmm? So why this is one of those things that begs for a federal solution, because it is a problem that affects and afflicts us all. Tough call, right? Not really. Mm-hmm. But Tim continues, also, I remember when the Republicans used to say we need our law enforcement to be proactive against crime. But when the Democrats are proactive by banning people on the watch list from buying firearms, the Republicans want terrorists to buy firearms so that they can arrest them? Huh? I know. Does the same thing to me, Tim. Kasich is saying the list may not be a good idea to ban firearms because the people who are monitored might find out that they're on the list. What happens if they try to get on a plane? Will they now allow terrorists on the plane? Gads, the NRA, it makes people stupid. And that's an absolute fact. Absolutely the truth. The NRA makes people stupid. Yes. Yes. Marty simply noting, Governor Brown 2.0 strikes. Yeah. So you get it. They don't, and maybe this tells us a little bit about the right-wing mindset, maybe more than we suspect. Maybe this explains to us that right-wingers, you know, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, Christian, Republican, evangelical, gundamentalist, amosexuals that they are, maybe they're okay with San Bernardino. Maybe they're okay with, we know they're okay with Colorado Springs because they was worried about the little fetuses after all. And they're okay with Virginia Tech, and they're okay with Newtown, and they're okay with Tucson, and they're okay with Aurora, Colorado, and they're okay with Columbine because the tree of liberty must be fed from time to time with the blood of tyrants and patriots and whatnot. It's just that I don't think Thomas Jefferson ever imagined that the patriots in question would be, you know, six. But oh well, freedom. Let's go over and see what's going on the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, long time no talkie.
It's been a while, John. What's happening?
Oh, listening and fuming and usual, listening to all this stuff. You know, it bugs me a little bit, and it's only because I have a slight science fiction bent to my mind. I mean, we're sitting here fussing and complaining about this stuff, but we already got 3D printers that can all but make everything but the ammunition for a gun. And, I mean, you know, it's like, it's, you know, like these two in San Bernardino, what scares me is that all these inspired, be it the Colorado Springs or be it San Bernardino, these are generally pretty messed up people, not particularly all that skilled. I mean, they go shoot the place up and then, you know, like San Bernardino ones, they drove around for a couple, 3 hours until they were finally picked up and got into another shootout. But what bugs me is what happens if you actually get people that might actually be somewhat trained and somewhat smart?
Well, wait. Syed Farouk was educated.
Oh, wow, but he wasn't like military trained.
No,
like
he was just college educated.
Yeah, but the thing I'm thinking of is, you know, if you don't go and nip this conversation a couple of days ago, you know, I'll try to dance a somewhat politically correct venue here. You know, these people, whether you like them, dislike them, agree with them, disagree, this is all bloke for 40, 50, 70, 100 years, 200 years, if you want to go back far enough, of the Western world screwing around with these people. And
yeah, I don't know, John. That's a little too simplistic for my taste. I mean, Robert Deere was not a Muslim, okay? Harris and Klebold, not Muslims. Dylan Roof, not a Muslim.
Well, I'm not referring to Muslims or Christians or anything like that. What I'm talking of is these people, again, talk about the whatever, but for the moment, just look at it, and this is my viewpoint, and I could be wrong, but you have people that, for whatever reason, have powerful and faith or belief or perception of the world or whatever that has no venue or opportunity in their minds to try to enact a change that they seek by any mechanism that we would consider legitimate. be it political or through elections or through social interaction or whatever. And if you pound them hard enough, it's like the guy Deer, you know, he has been pounded and pounded and pounded and pounded for, what, 20 years with Fox News and right-wing radio and the Rush Limbaughs and all that stuff, being told day in and day out that there is an evil walking the world. And that evil must be combated.
Right, right. And that evil at present tends to be defined as the boogeyman of the moment, in this case, Islam.
Right.
It wasn't that long ago when it was the march of worldwide communism.
Yep, exactly. And I suspect that with the advancing technology that's going on out there with, like, say, 3D printing and, you know, anybody with even who took a cup of coffee in a organic chemistry class could produce explosives and ammunition, and we're getting to a point now where, any second or third year, student in organic chemistry or any type of stuff can come up with all kinds of very dangerous weapons and stuff. We cannot at some point in time address those fundamental problems, then it's just going to get worse. It's two in San Bernardino, as bad as it was, it could have been a hell of a lot worse. Because the thing that was scared the hell out, think about it this way. What if they were just a little bit smarter and had managed to disappear after the shooting? Southern California would have been in panic and lockdown mode for days, waiting for the next shoe to drop. And that takes terrorism to a whole new level. I mean, remember what happened when the shooter was up in Washington, D.C. for like a week or two doing shooting around the CIA complex and stuff back, eight years ago, something like that. I mean, lived in the area, and the place went into freaking lockdown mode. Everybody,
are you talking about the Beltway Sniper?
Yeah, that's what I was referring to. And, we have to kind of, in this, again, I might be offending somebody, but...
Yeah, and he had him one of them Muslimy names, too, didn't he?
Yeah, these people, and I'm talking mostly Muslim, but this also can be referred to your Christians. So this comes back to a conversation I had a long time ago. There are people who, for whatever reason, cannot stomach this new world we're moving into. They can't do it. They can't deal with the fact that the gay people now are treated, have a greater equality than these people could even possibly accept. Muslims are living in a world where, for whatever reason, they have grudges that last generations, and they know damn well that they're not coming over here and invading this country to kill the great state. And so they're kind of falling back on the whatever methods and techniques are available to them, which we in the West call terrorism. One president said, one man's terrorist, another man's freedom fighter.
What was that, Mommy?
Yeah, that was, I think, St. Ronnie, but... My ideal is that until we can get to a point where those tactics become universally reviled, even by the Muslims, by the pro-lifers, and all these other people, then this stuff's never going to end. Because you're always going to find some nutball that says to himself, "Well, my life sucks, but I'm going to go out in a blaze of glory, and I'm going to do, Halo 3 or whatever, and go out and take out, and do my bit for Jesus." And as long as these people are convinced, and this kind of falls back into your bailiwick, as long as they believe that there's some magic place that they go to after they die, then they're willing to blow their own lives. But if they could put the religion down and realize that this is it, this is your one shot at life, they would be a hell of a lot more careful with it. But that's my personal opinion.
Well, there's but there's another problem here too, John, and that's this. In any attempt to enact some sort of sensible response to a spiraling out of control pandemic of gun violence in this country, any such attempt becomes becomes self-proof of the conspiracy that the gun goobers have maintained is out there all along. Okay, so now they're not there. There's no way that the gun goobers and who would want them to really can protect. Maybe I missed it. Is there a cadre of gun goobers, freedom protectors, who are going to go and stand guard at every Planned Parenthood in this country? Because I missed it if they are. Well, no, they're not, because they don't care about Planned Parenthood. Are gun goobers organizing now to protect every holiday party in the United States? Well, hardly, because a lot of those holiday parties, well, they're just holiday parties, and goddammit, they're not saying Merry Christmas. Okay, so that's off the list. Are the gun goobers banding together to protect every school? Again, no. Every mall? Sorry. Every church? Okay? The gun goobers only see freedom through a very, very narrow little gun slit in their paranoid walls. The only thing that defines freedom to a gun goober is having guns. So if we say there's some reason why a gun goober shouldn't have lots and lots of guns, then that proves there's a conspiracy against gun goobers. And at that point in time, it is obvious to anybody, everybody, and especially gun goobers, that freedom is under attack. Now, freedom isn't under attack for a gun goober just because one in every four children in this country goes to bed hungry every night. That has nothing to do with freedom. It has nothing to do with the fact that there are still thousands and thousands and thousands of people who go without health insurance in this country, and frankly, they're as or more likely to die from that than they are from a gunfire wound. But if they get a gunfire wound, they're going to wind up with a monumental hospital bill that nobody's going to be willing to pay.
Yeah, but it was obvious. You said it yourself. You know, it's a Smith & Wesson baby blanket. They're afraid. The world is changing on them. They are no longer, it is no longer correct and polite and well heralded that the white guy is the highly respected scion of society. He now is being told that he must share that space with that homosexual, as you call them, the black guy that he can't look down on anybody anymore. His world is changing.
And that is proof that the system was flawed in the first place. Because again, Goob is out there defining his self-worth by in terms of those upon whom he can look down his nose.
Well, I mean, I had the answer handed to me a few days ago by a gentleman, a rancher fellow. I forgot his name, but not important here. And he made a statement kind of on offhand. It was partially on a different conversation, but that statement that he made to me crystallized everything. A lot of what's going on. Now, I don't know if you'll agree with it or not, but I'll toss it out there for your examination. And we were talking about politics, economics, and stuff like that. And he said the following. He said, how can I be seen as rich if there is nobody who's poor? And if you take that, and this is my mindset here, and you can laugh at it or not, but my mindset actually, that crystallizes a lot of this. Rich guys can only be rich if there's somebody else they can lord over. Your white privileged guy, especially he's living in a trailer park with a miserable little, you know, crap job, but as long as there's somebody else that he can look at and say, as the Jewish guy says, you know, Jewish guys, especially the great Orthodox, actually say things like, you know, at least I wasn't born a woman. Well, a white guy living in a trailer park can say, at least I wasn't born black, or at least I wasn't born a Muslim. And I can always, no matter how shitty my life is, there's somebody else who's worse off. But if everybody, those people are lifted up, then what has he got?
And there, right, and what you're talking about is an assault on privilege.
Right, even the privilege of a guy in a trailer park or a beat up apartment, you know, beat up house, living and driving a car that's 20 years old, held together with duct tape. But as long as, even if the guy is better off in many ways, but if he's black, then he can always look down on him in his own mind. But his guns are his, I call it the Smith & Wesson baby blanket. He can always, you know, stroke that bugger and say, you know, if it all goes to hell, because he doesn't believe the government works. He believes that society is there to take away from him. They all operate on the idea of a zero-sum game. If they get pay raises, that means it's coming out of my pocket. If that such and such woman is, and I hear this all the time, all them women going out and having all them babies and, you know, all that welfare. I know all these women that go out.
Yeah, John, do we really still, I mean, do people still really talk that way? Because welfare ain't worth a damn anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all over with. Bill Clinton took that out behind the barn and beat it to death. The era of big government is over.
Not according to these mugs, and not in the travel circles I travel. I, like I said, I stop in various truck stops and places along the road, and particularly in the South, it's the same damn thing. It doesn't matter what the reality is. They, as far as they're concerned, if the government writes a check to anybody but somebody who's getting a corporate subsidy for being a farmer, or getting a check for being
right,
a
well,
military,
there's checks and there's government money checks and there's government money checks.
Exactly. If it's, you know, if it's
now, if poor people are getting a check, that's just because they ain't working hard enough. They're a bunch of lazy layabouts.
Exactly. Their sense of entitlement says, there's a guy I listen to oftentimes, he calls it gimmickarianism. And I love it because it's a perfect statement, a description of these people. They want what they want, and nobody else is entitled to anything until after they've gotten theirs. And once they've gotten theirs, maybe once in a while, you know, we'll toss a few pennies into the plastic jar at the checkout counter for little Bobby Sue who has leukemia and needs extra money. We'll throw some change in there, and that makes us feel good, like the Lord of the Manor giving alms to the poor. But don't give it to them if they're, you know, especially if it comes from some type of government, because these people firmly believe that if the government writes the check, it's coming out of their pocket. And they won't have that. They just flat won't have that. And so they would, I mean, these people, you know, we talked about it before, the whole Ayn Randian thing, although most of the ones I talk to, you say Ayn Rand, they go, who? Because most of them, you know, Ayn Rand is kind of a rather rarefied thing for most of these people, but that attitude goes through there. They don't believe in society. They believe that the end is coming, society is going to collapse, buy gold now because the economy is going to collapse, and you're going to be on your own. And I hear it all the time. Well, I've got my 30 acres of farmland out wherever the hell I'm at. You know, I've got my guns, and, you know, if society collapses, I'll just do some hunting, and I know how to grow my own food and this stuff. I'm like, yeah. And when the hordes of hungry people come, you're just going to kill them all. Well, yep, that's how it works. No. I've done my bitch for a while. I'm going to let you go.
All right, John, it's awful good to hear from you.
Sorry for bumping your time there.
Oh, no. That's what this is all about. You stay safe, talk soon, and happy holidays.
You too, my friend.
All right. Bye now. Our buddy John out on the road. Points unknown. Note coming in from the marvelously coherent Diane in Kansastan. A cruisin' moran is the subject line. Diane says, it went by pretty fast, but what I think I just now saw and heard on PBS is the following. Hillary Clinton spoke on what it would take to defeat ISIS. Then there was a clip of the anointed cruise moran saying that American citizens don't need to hear a lecture from a school marm. School marm. Referring to Clinton. If this is indeed what I heard, it is how a Harvard graduate insults both educators and women in one pithy sentence. And no, I did not lisp there. Pithy, P-I-T-H-Y. Schoolmarm indeed. Republicans cannot help but insult anyone not in their outhouse where they fixate on toilet politics. Signed, still in Kansastan, but not a schoolmarm. Diane. Thank you, Diane. And, well, why am I not surprised? Of course, you know that, sorry, I didn't mean to bang the mic there. You know that Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the new anointed future king of America, son of Rafael Eduardo Cruz, who forgot to become an American for 17 years. Thank you, Michael. He lived here for 17 years, and just when somebody asked, I forgot. I forgot to become an American. Yeah, oopsie. But anyway, you know that Rafaelito is now officially in first place in Iowa. And, you know, who was in first place in Iowa 5 months ago didn't really matter. Now it's beginning to matter because, what is that, February the 1st? So that's 31 plus 55 days, is it, until the Iowa caucuses? It's getting serious now. And he's in, yeah. And that's a little interesting. Remember a long time back when they said that some Republican, maybe it was Rents Penis or whatever, said that, that Donald Trump was a secret Democratic plant to make Republicans look stupid so that the way would be cleared for Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton. I'm beginning to think there may be an element of truth to that, only it has nothing to do with Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton. Now, T. Rump has attacked Rubio, he's attacked Mumbling Ben Carson, he's attacked Carly Farina, on and on and on. He hasn't had a lot to say about Ted Cruz except for the fact that maybe he'd like him to be his running mate. And anybody who follows knows that Ted Cruz is dangerously hateful. He is a fascist with a capital F. And now he's in first place in Iowa. And you know what? When he uses a term like school marm for Hillary Clinton, not that this is the Hillary Clinton defense channel, it's not. I gotta wonder. Because, of course, T. Rump is out with a new outrage. Somebody put a nickel into the T. Rump outrage machine, and it spat something out. By way of Patrick Healy and Michael Barbaro at the New York Times First Draft, headline, Donald Trump calls for barring Muslims from entering U.S. Donald J. Trump called on Monday for the United States to bar all Muslims from entering the country until the nation's leaders can figure out what is going on. An extraordinary escalation of his harsh rhetoric aimed at members of the Islamic faith in the aftermath of the terrorist attacks in Paris and San Bernardino, California. Without looking at the various polling data, it is obvious to anybody the hatred is beyond comprehension. Where this hatred comes from and why we will have to determine, said Mr. Trump. Again, this is not from The Onion. This isn't the Daily Current or any of those really unfunny attempts at political satire. This is really the New York Times. And Donald J. Trump, millionaire, I own a mansion and a yacht, said this. He wants to block entry to the United States for anyone who is a Muslim, which means that you're going to have a religious test for entry of the into the United States. Now, see, there's a big difference between saying that people, you know, we're not going to let people come from certain countries. For instance, and I'll go ahead and say this, because, well, I think, given September the 11th, 2001, and given the barbarity with which they run their government, and given their miserable, godforsaken human rights record, I don't think we would be in the wrong to say, sorry, nobody comes here from Saudi Arabia anymore. I'm not calling for that, but I'm saying that it would at least be understandable. Or if we were to say anyone coming from Saudi Arabia will be subjected to the highest levels of national security scrutiny. Eh? Okay. But to say, because that means you got to have a checkbox. Are you a Muslim? No? Come on in. But that's what, and some of this is because, well, T. Rump sees himself falling behind. So every time that he falls behind, in this case in Iowa, he's behind Cruz now, he has to say something monstrously mean and hateful. And then all of his mean and hateful followers get back in line behind him. Because look, whether you realize it or not, or whether I want to acknowledge it, we live in a country with a significant plurality of people who would be just damned fine with saying no Muslims need apply. You know your American history. I know my history. We have bigotry streaks as broad as boulevards through our history. It's baked in. And every time we try to do something that runs contrary to that, it is a matter of dragging a certain portion of this country kicking and screaming along behind the rest of us. And frankly, it's not just this country. Famously, Spain, after the Reconquista, kicked out all the Muslims and all the Jews, except for the ones who agreed to convert to Roman Catholicism. But Spain wasn't the only one. England, at one point in time, kicked out the Jews. France kicked out the Jews. What European countries, and there ain't a lot of them, didn't at some point in time try to kick out the Jews? Or actually kick out the Jews, or ban Jews from owning property, or any of those things. There is a nasty, nasty, and a deep, deep current of racism and bigotry in Europe, and in Europe's little bastard child, the United States. We can pretend that it isn't there, but it is.
And that's the next thing, really. Now that you've got now that you've got Donald J. Trump, millionaire, I own a mansion and a yacht. Now that you've got him saying, let's ban them from entry, how far are we from, I'm Donald J. Trump, millionaire, I own a mansion and a yacht, let's throw them all out? He already says he wants to get rid of 11 million undocumented Hispanic immigrants, right? And we kind of scratched our heads and said, wow, what a jerk. So what's to stop him from saying, let's get, right? Can you think of anything that would stop that walking id from saying that? Because I can't. I got nothing. And meanwhile, as Carol just pointed out to me, every news outlet du jour is repeating ad nauseam, that's French and Latin, in one sentence, mi amigo, Spanish. They're repeating it on an endless loop. And this is his response to the president's address to the people. Yeah, well, what I think we need to do is get rid of, keep you Muslims from coming into the United States Day. I mean, I saw some meme over the weekend where some dumbass right-winger was saying, those two people got into America and they were vetted by the FBI, you know, talking about Farouk and Malik. No, they weren't. Mr. Farouk was born here, born that way. And his wife came here on a visa contingent upon her marrying Mr. Farouk. See how it works? Yeah. Yeah. So, let's take a little break. It's the top of the hour. We've still got $150 to raise for this evening. I certainly hope we can do that. 15 at 10, 10 at 15. If it's 15 at 10, that means it's 30 at 5. We can do this. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid, and we'll be back.
Man to be here.
Yeah, why not a little Emerson, Lake, and Palmer to break up the Moranity on a Moran Monday. 5 minutes past 8 p.m. here in the Eastern Standard Time Zone. And it is, in fact, Moran Monday on the horn. A couple of emails. Marty asks regarding Donald J. Trump, millionaire who owns a mansion and a yacht. And why stop there? Who's the next hated group du jour? Well, you had to ask, didn't you? Because it was just a couple of days ago that that Ted Nugent, self-defecator, declared that the United States needs to be cleansed of liberals. All liberals. You know, you, me, the Horn family. Hey, Ted, you know, piss off, okay? Ted Theodore Nugent, yeah. So, I mean, there's your answer. Absolutely, there is your answer. Note coming in from Ron in the balmy north, who says, I don't intend to come across as mean-spirited. Up where I am, this El Nino climate change deal is bearable. I know. But Ron also notes, and I wasn't saying that we should ban Saudi Arabians from coming to the United States. I despise their royal, majestic, noble, serene graciousness. I do. They're getting ready to stone a woman to death, an au pair for a wealthy Saudi couple. Yeah, they're going to stone her to death because they're the serene, majestic, royal, noble graciousness that is Saudi Arabia. Oh, someday, Royal House, someday. It comes to all monarchies, you know, sooner or later. Ron says, the reality is that if we barred Saudi Arabian citizens, it would probably unleash a torrent of money to fund ISIS. And if we seized the Saudi assets, it would eventually morph into the destruction of our economy. The unfortunate fact is that the two countries we can't afford to piss off are China and Saudi Arabia. Which is probably true. Which is probably true. But I personally would love to... would love to get free of those thugs. And there's only one way to do it. And that is to become not energy independent, but oil independent. Independent of the need of oil. Or reduce our need for it to the point where it is almost negligible. You know, we can do that. There's one little area of Nevada that could provide, there's enough solar energy striking that area of Nevada to power the entire United States a couple of times over, and the same with wind in North Dakota. It's the technology that's the booger there. It's the storage and the transmission. But we could do it, and then we could tell the Saudis to do whatever they wanted to with ISIS. Burn the whole place to the ground. Goodbye! Because on that day when Saudi oil is no longer necessary, the only hold they're going to have on the world is as the keepers of Mecca. And that's it. And they'll just be a tourist destination. But I don't like us being shoved around by the Saudis any more than I like us being shoved around by the Israelis. And those two are buddies. I mean, it's kind of like a, I don't know, Romeo and Juliet. You know, they couldn't let anybody see that they were dating, but they were crazy about each other. Yeah. Ron also notes news outlets repeating du jour is a net result of news aggregators rather than journalism. And frankly, you know, maybe that's what they are, Matt. That's what for-profit TV journalism is now. It's just an aggregator. Let's see, a couple of, Gerald says, tech issue. It sounds like one channel's in a drum. Yeah, I'm sorry about that. That's, we're continuing to work on it. So these things are supposed to sum out, but, sometimes they don't. Let's go over to the stress line. And talk to Jim in Nevada Stan. There you are. Maybe you're not even far at all away from that place that where all that sunlight lands.
What's up, Bob?
What's happening, Jim?
All right. No, it's... It just doesn't... It doesn't seem to stop how... You know, the gun shootings, I'm waiting for the next one. You know, and I'm not saying that with glee, you know, with...
No, you're saying that as a participant in reality.
Yeah, well, it's just like when the first one happened. And, oh, and the other thing is the reaction. I mean, God damn it. I mean, I voted for Obama twice. I go for him a third time, you know, if my boy Bernie wasn't running. And I'll vote for Hillary if she gets or steals the nomination. You know, I don't, you know, I'm not too trustful of politics, you know, just the way it runs in this country. And it goes to both parties, more so to the Republicans. But, you know, I can't be naive and think that there isn't a sect. Well, it goes back to the Clinton Democrats, you know, when they got in. And then it goes back to the stupidity of the American people, just always backing. I mean, not always backing, but is my imagination or are they simplistically hoodwinked?
No, it's not you. I mean, it's the you. I think we are traumatized. And I think we're trying to figure out a way where this is, where we can somehow suggest that this isn't our reality, but it's our reality, Jim, isn't it?
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, well, I mean, it started what 30 some odd years ago with the Reagan miracle, you know, and even then that was all basically on cutting taxes on the rich, and 90 some odd percent of us. A high percentage of us aren't really that rich. And just because you saw a couple $100, $600 more in your pocket, you know, it doesn't compare to what the 1% made. I mean, but you can't even talk to a lot of people about that. Not that I'm out there campaigning or anything, because it's pointless. People are just too busy keeping their nose to the grindstone. You know, it's almost like also here in America, it's almost a mindset about, I mean, I'm not, you know, I haven't traveled the world. I've been to Amsterdam, I've been to London. That's about my, the extent of my foreign travels. But, you know, it's not like I'm in Europe where, you know, you end up, I mean, it's so easy to go to different countries and see how they live. And in here, you know, you have to, even though I'm in Nevada, and I like the little part of that. That was good. Man. But I mean, it's like, I guess I'm not going to hold my breath waiting for the Great Awakening. Or do you think there's a chance for Bernie? I think he's having an effect.
I think he's having a very definite effect. He won the online reader poll for Times Man of the Year, and he won out over the young Afghan woman who got shot and refused to stop learning, and Pope Frank. They came in second and third, respectively. There's no doubt he's making a difference, and people are talking about him. But and I'm not flagging at all in my support of him. And I do get questions like, what are you Bernie people going to do when Hillary gets nominated? And I keep answering the question honestly, Jim. I keep saying, well, in that case, I will I'll go to the polls and I'll put a bag over my head and a clothespin on my nose, and vote for Hillary.
I mean, I don't see any alternatives. I don't see any alternatives. I reckon maybe Jill Stein will be on the ballot in West Virginia, but I've had my dalliance with the Mountain Party here, and they're our form of the Greens, and they got nothing, and they're never going to be anything. Okay.
Oh no, I know. It's like I voted for the Green Party in 2000. Not that my vote, because I was living here in Nevada, and Nevada was a red state, and I'm pretty sure it wouldn't have affected the election one way or the other. Because I even kind of, because I'm kind of a, got some ACD with numbers and stuff, and I kind of will add up numbers. And as I remember, it wouldn't have mattered if, I mean, since the election was stolen anyway, but it wouldn't have mattered if all the, what's his name, Nader, the public Nader votes had voted for Gore. I don't think Gore would have won. The fix is already in. I mean, they knew that was the election to win. And the only there's a lot of regrets, but the regret I have is that they didn't fight hard, but they just did it seem like it was like a big conservative wave coming? I mean, there's going to be a big conservative wave coming no matter who wins. I mean, no matter who the nominee is, you know, if it's close, which it should be, do you think there'll be a big, to get out the Bernie, I'm jumping all over the place. To get out the Bernie vote is very important. And I just hope that works out. You know, it's really weird because I realize that I might hit three or four elections. Four might be really extreme. You know, and you're not that far behind me. Where it's three or four elections that, you know, the next ones could decide a lot. And you know, the other one after that, well, we'll see. You know, and as Bernie says, you know, we need the House and the Senate. You know, I hope that it would be so great if that would happen.
It would be, and I suppose that's. I don't see the House changing much. Maybe the Senate changes. In a Hillary Clinton presidency, and she'll be off and campaigning for all she's worth to make something happen in 2018. Dear God, I just mentioned 2018, and we're not even to 16 yet, and see what happens. I mean, it just gets you. But no, the greatest possibility for a groundswell of change, a real sea change, is people really, really jumping in behind Bernie and. But again, we're dealing with gerrymandering. And here later in the, maybe here in a few minutes on the program, I've got, I mean, you want to get depressed about the state of, and you know what I think of this phrase, our democracy. Well, it's going to get even more grim here in a couple of minutes. So Bernie Sanders as president of the United States could probably do a lot more through executive orders than even Hillary would do. But that's as far as it goes with the Congress in the current shape that it's in. This Congress could not agree on where to call out for lunch.
I totally understand. Believe it or not, even growing up as a young lad, I learned to deal with political reality a lot more than I think a lot of people.
Jim, I think about other things, and I get a little bit scared in this regard too. What happens when it becomes necessary for Bernie to bomb somebody? Because we are Merca and we bomb people. That's what we do. And there's no way we're not a Ghana, okay? He's Bernie Sanders, not Gandhi. All right.
Right.
And so what's gonna happen to all those twee precious progressives when Bernie orders the carrier strike group to go out and, you know, bomb somebody back into the Bronze Age?
Yeah. Well,
I mean, you know our side as well as I do. Okay. And did, oh goddamn, he's no different than Dick Cheney. Oh son of a. And so then they stay home in 2018, and you know, there's like two Democrats left in the House.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's basically what screwed up Obama both terms. I mean, 2010, I mean, he had like that little window in 2009 to 2000, and then, you know, it's, yeah, and I think it's, probably because the people don't know how the government really works, and they, you know, they think their congressman's the best one, even though he's screwing them over. But I'll bet, you know, and I'm hoping somehow that some sort of landswell, some sort of virus, democratic virus that goes out, enlightened all the quote unquote free enlightened thinkers or so-called enlightened thinkers that this. Dude, for you and me, this is our last chance. I really think it is. I mean,
and you maybe within terms of our generation, Jim. Yes, but hope springs eternal, and that's why this has been ongoing. That's why we bothered to fight the Civil War, frankly. But earlier today, and I'll be uploading it in a little bit. Earlier today, Dr. Bill and Horst had another one of their wonderful conversations, and Horst pointed out that, you know, James, there's stuff in James Madison to make you think that, you know, by the time we get to Andrew Jackson, James Madison's looked up and gone, well, this went sideways in a hurry. And that whole Republican self-government sovereignty, common clay of the New West, toiling at the soil and being intimately involved in Republican governance. And it was all just over. Because by then, the First Great Awakening had begun to unfold. The religious stupidification of the frontier was in full swing. And Madison must have just looked up and gone, well, I got 70 or 80 years on this planet, and apparently I just freaking wasted it.
Yeah, well, another thing I think about along those lines, I think, is like slavery. If you have thought like slavery would have ended, you know, when the Revolution started in 1876, the ratification of the Constitution or whatever, what was it?
1787.
But if you would have thought that by 1865, even though it was mostly on paper, the Emancipation Proclamation, I think it was 1863 that was signed, wasn't it signed? 1863?
Yeah, that's
by Lincoln.
Yeah.
Before he, yeah.
But see, even that, wait, Jim, before you get the cart out in front of the cart out in front of the oxen, and especially the off oxen, that sucker's dangerous. The Constitution itself represents a sort of repudiation of the Enlightenment principles that were behind the propaganda statement that was the Declaration of Independence. We actually tried via the Articles of Confederation the kind of stuff that was contemplated in the Declaration of Independence. And the next thing you know, there was democracy breaking out all over the place, and the money looked up and went, well, this will not do. And so they had them a little convention, and they were just going to tweak the Articles of Confederation. And then they got in there and they said, nah, this is a constitutional convention. The Articles of Confederation are done. And Dr. Bill went into all of this today in the context of this ongoing cry for a second constitutional convention. And anybody who has been in any wise bamboozled by the people who are saying that that would be a good idea, who are progressives, needs to hear this so that they'll understand that whoever the progressive people are that think we need to have a second constitutional convention should probably put down the pipe, step away from the little acid eyedropper,
and quit putting so damn many mushrooms on the pizza. You know, the ones they find out in the pasture that make the walls ones. Breathe.
The good ones, yeah. I totally agree. And I wish I had, you know, 2-3 hours I tried and devote to you and devote, I mean, listen to you and 3 hours to my wife. That's a quarter of the day. But when I caught Dr. Bill, he's fantastic. All I'm going to say is I'm very hopeful for Bernie and somehow some awakening for America, because I think the hour is getting late. I hope I'm wrong. I don't know what's going to happen. Never mind 2 years or 4 years. It's frightening. It's scary. I mean, and if you look at it, and I've seen stuff on the internet, the living standards going down, and they're conditioning us, and the stupidity of the American people is going up, and my model for America is proud to be stupid. You know, it almost seems there's certain segments throughout the country that are like, you know, proud to be stupid. That's maybe I'm being a bit harsh. So
no, I don't. I think you're being realistic. Jim? What else are we supposed to say about people who? This is something I got from Carol a minute ago. You're not going to love it. You know, of course, that there was a baby born to Farouk and Malik. Okay, the San Bernardino shooters.
All right.
Okay. So here's a Facebook comment. Baby of ISIS terrorists of San Bernardino was born here, so it is technically U.S. citizen, correct? Are we taxpayers going to pay for it? Okay? The baby is an it. Now, if this was a good little white, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, Christian, evangelical, gun-dementalist, ammosexual baby, it would be a he or a she. But because it's a little Muslim baby, it's a it, okay? Are we taxpayers going to pay for it for life with free medical assistance, food stamps, WIC benefits? Who is going to raise it? Will it be entitled to college scholarships since it is parentless? I know it is a child, and this was not caused by the child, but I just don't feel like I need to support it.
Well, there are some cool-hearted SOBs out there. You know what I mean? The baby's going to be born with a lot of obstacles without that stuff. To begin mm-hmm. with, mm-hmm. giving the cutting back, it's not a fetus anymore, so it's gonna have to pull itself. And I'm not laughing at it; I'm laughing at irony. So I don't cry. It's gonna have to pull itself up by its bootstraps if the Republicans get their way, which they seem to do since they control both houses. Hello, America, wake up! Let's take a vote voting. Even though the Democrat might not be, hopefully there's a whole.
You know what? You know. Here's the ultimate question, though, Jim. What if Tashfeen Malik had done her shooting while she was, say, 8.5 months pregnant? Oh my goodness gracious! Wouldn't the little fetus fetishizers be in a conundrum? Them, oh, save the baby! No, don't save the baby. That's a terrorist baby. Oh, but it's a fetus. You see what I mean?
Well, what if she'd been? Yeah. Well, what if she'd been concussed? Somehow she stepped outside of a Muslim mind. And by the way, our religion is BS to me. I mean,
I get it. I mean.
But what if she decided to have an abortion and abort the Muslim baby? I mean, would you abort And that would be a good question for Republicans. Would you abort a Muslim baby? What do you think your answer is?
Well, no, because, see, you're not born Muslim. What happens is after that baby was born, it could be raised by a good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual family, and then it could have a place in heaven and have its name written in the Lamb's Book of Life.
Well, I saw it never once again on the internet reference, like 150 million people say they want to adopt, and like some small, pathetic excuse that people adopt babies. You know, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
Well, Jim, you have yourself a good evening. It's awful good talking to you.
Double back at you, Bob, as always. It's a pleasure. It's enlightening, but sometimes a little bit painful.
I understand.
That's the way truth is sometimes. Check you later, Bob.
All right, see ya. Bye now. Our buddy Jim calling from Nevada, Stan. I mentioned a story that I wanted to make sure that we get this out there. There's an argument going to be had beginning tomorrow in the Supreme Court of the United States. You might want to make a note of this and sort of keep it on your radar, because Evanwell versus Abbott may actually become one of those shorthand, and we'll just call it Evanwell, one of those shorthand phrases we use for the screwing of America, kind of like the way we say Hobby Lobby now. Two right-wing teabaggers, well, that's redundant, named Sue Evanwell and Ed Feninger, P-F-E-N-N-I-N-G-E-R, Ed Feninger, have sued over a law in Texas. And that law in Texas is designed to see that people are appropriately represented in districts. I mean, even though they're not. I mean, gerrymandering. It gets a little complex, but here's what it boils down to. These two baggers want the Supreme Court of the United States to create a how they all the time complain about 9 black-robed, unelected judges. Well, in this case, the baggers, who, of course, have a well-funded legal campaign underway, the baggers want to create what is described as a uniform national standard for how we go about drawing legislative districts. And what's disturbing about this is the fact that they want these districts to be based upon the number of eligible voters rather than the general population. Ooh, see, huh? Oh, this could make a big difference. Because if you're only districting based on the number of eligible voters, well, that cuts down significantly on who basically you're drawing your districts around. If they win, these two bizarre right-wing creatures, if they win, that means the disenfranchisement of millions of people, because, see, congressional districts, for instance, are drawn on a populational basis, not on a registered voter basis, with the theory being that, okay, so you're not 18, you can't vote yet. You still technically deserve to be represented in the government. I mean, that's why we pass things like the Children's Health Insurance Program, because we're trying to act as a government to do best by children who need to be covered by health insurance. Well, this bill, or this lawsuit, says screw them. We're going to draw districts as if unregistered voters, people not registered to vote, people not allowed to vote, felons, okay, people who couldn't vote by reason of their immigration status,
or their undocumented status, we are going to district as though they do not even exist. We're going to erase them from the national suffrage consciousness, if you will. Among other things, Latino majority districts would become a significant unlikelihood. Okay. Every current state map, every current state legislative map in the entire country would be rendered unconstitutional under this ruling. It would require the redrawing of 21% of state House districts and 17% of state Senate districts in the country. The changes would be monumental in places like Texas and California, maybe Arizona. Okay? This is one to watch. And what becomes particularly interesting is this Ed Fenninger guy. This isn't brand new or anything, but this is one of the plaintiffs in this case, and I want you to hear a little bit of his political philosophy so you can know where this stuff is coming from.
Good evening. In this video, I wanted to look at the reason why individuals end up in hell. Reason a person ends up in hell is not because he sins. The reason a person ends up in hell is because of his unbelief. And that is the one thing that keeps him out of heaven. The sins show he's a sinner. And he needs a new nature. That is why sins are talked about, particular sins are talked about to an individual. Not that those sins are keeping him out of heaven, but the fact that he has a nature that needs to be changed. In Revelation 20, it is said that the verse 12, and I saw the dead small and great stand before God, and the books were open. Another book was opened, which is the book of life. And the dead were judged out of those things which were written in the books according to their works. And the sea gave up the dead which were in it, and the death and hell delivered up the dead which were in them, and they judged every man according to their works. And death and hell were cast into the lake of fire. This is the second death. And whosoever was not found written in the book of life was cast into the lake of fire. So that is the key. Your name has to be in the book of life. How do you get in? How does your name get in that book of life? By faith in the Lord Jesus Christ and what he did for you on the cross. He died for your sins on the cross, was buried, and rose again on the third day according to the scriptures. And that is the criteria to get your name in the book of life. What keeps a man out of the book, his name out of the book of life, is unbelief. And that is what the issue is when he's talking about.
No, shut up. This guy really is the plaintiff in this particular voting rights case. He's a security guard. Okay. But the fun part is that there are oodles. I mean, this guy just makes oodles of YouTube videos, sitting there just talking into the microphone, just like he was talking there, and you know, with your lamb's book of life there from your Revelations, you know. And so he doesn't like the Jews, he doesn't like the Catholics, and he particularly has a real hatred for women with short hair. But, as the old Ginsu commercial goes, that's not all, there's more. He believes unicorns are real. Yes, he does, isn't that precious? Yes. And he also thinks that the sun revolves around the earth. And he was recruited to be a plaintiff by a guy named Ed Blum, B-L-U-M, Blum, whose argument is that, and he runs this well-funded outfit called the Project on Fair Representation.
Wait a minute. Let me see something here.
The Project on Fair Representation.
Yeah. And he says that, that Bloom's argument is that only eligible voters are entitled to legislative representation under the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment. Now, there's nothing out there that says that. It's just something that landed in Bloom's head one day because he was trying to sit there and figure out how, damn it, we gotta figure out a way to stop all of these wrong coloreds from voting all the time and ruining everything for all of us. Now, he's never... This is a novel question for the Supreme Court. And the rats and that Kennedy kid, yeah, what do you... Just go check it out. Maybe catch a bookie in Reno or something on his break or something. What kind of odds would you give me? Oh, Roberts, Alito, Thomas and Scalia and that Kennedy kid, they're going to be all over this. They're going to love this.
You can have official legislative representation when you turn 18 and you become an eligible voter, if you can become an eligible voter. That makes perfect sense to us. There's nothing in the Constitution that says you cannot do that.
In other words, Mr. Fenninger is a mall cop who isn't harmed by the law over which he is suing. But he wants to disenfranchise millions of Americans. By the way, it was Mr. Bloom who was behind Shelby County versus Holder, which gave John Roberts the opportunity to gut the Voting Rights Act. Now you're going to take him seriously, aren't you? Yes, you are. Mm-hmm.
18 minutes before the hour.
Oh, let's run over and see what Jim's got to say. Hey, Jim.
Hey, how are you, Ducky? How are you?
Oh, quite well. Thank you very much.
Well, I just wanted to say, in honor of Pearl Harbor Day, your father's service in the belly of that aircraft carrier, that took a hell of a lot more guts than I would to have been 40 feet below the line of a ship had it gone to Davy Jones' locker room. So I respect him and appreciate his service.
Well, I got to see what that space was like when I went aboard the Yorktown at the end of early October down there, and lo and behold, that's where T Rump is tonight, declaiming on how much he hates Obama and Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton and I guess everybody else.
You know, I think the Republican Party is scared to death of Trump. I really do. Because I think that he is the only candidate that they could put forward that Hillary could beat. I mean, this guy has gone so far off the flight deck. He is just absolutely dangerous, and I think he's really frightening a lot of right-wing people.
You know, but I mentioned that a couple of minutes ago, Jim. I'm beginning to think that he's a fifth column for Ted Cruz.
Well, that may very well be, because politics is a rather strange game. But nonetheless, the more he gesticulates and says all the stuff that he does, and I'm basing this on a conversation I had with a right-wing Republican, and I asked her, I said, you know, what do you think of Mr. Trump? And she said, well, I like some of what he says. How do you feel? And I said, I just love it, and I hope he gets a nomination. And then the reply was, you know, I think you are trying to put me in a vulnerable position politically. And I said, why? I said, don't you like what he says? He's successful. He's powerful. He's just
and if
outrageous.
And if you were to read some reports, Angry just provided these to me. Apparently, Mr. Trump is all mobbed up.
With what? His head?
No. I mean, lots of significant interactions with the mob.
Oh, well, I wouldn't doubt that. I mean, hell, how can you do business in New York City without being mobbed up? I mean, good God, you got five families there. They didn't go away with as much as people would like for you to think how the mob has been, you know, castrated, so to speak. They're quite powerful. And, you know, that wouldn't surprise me. I don't know if he and Guido are good friends or not, but I'm sure he's had dealings with them. Hell, everybody has.
Well, it's not just Guido, it's Misha and various, because apparently, let's see here. Here's a headline. Donald Trump, Russian mafia ties revealed in collapse of Florida real estate deal.
Well, he better watch himself with those people, because they're even meaner than the Italians.
The Independent reported, Donald Trump walks out over questions about his mafia connections during BBC Panorama interview.
Well, I guess so. I mean, he didn't want to get the Brighton Beach crowd after him now, you think?
They might be people whose calls he takes.
Well, I'm just telling you, those people in Brighton Beach, they're nobody to mess with, not at all.
But
so
I think,
we'll see.
But see, this is, and you know, this is also the curse of paranoia, Jim. The Republican establishment despises Trump, but guess who else they hate? They hate Ted Cruz too.
Well, they're going to have a hard time in deciding whom they like.
And now Ted Cruz is in front in Iowa.
Uh-huh. Well,
and he's in the lead in Iowa, largely thanks to the fact that Trump hasn't attacked him. Trump has spoken well of him and has kind of created the space for him to emerge.
Well, they still seem to be a rather disaffected and disconnected group, so who knows? But Mr. Trump is just, he's Mr. Trump, and that's all I'm going to say about it. Well, you know, what will he say next? But, you know, going on to another subject very quickly, this ISIS thing. Now, that is indeed regrettable, and I'm just going to say this as a private citizen, that's all I'm saying it as. But I just believe that ISIS basically is our own golem, our own Frankenstein.
I think there's a lot of truth in that. And they're also a creation of our dear friends, the noble, royal, majestic, serene graciousnesses of Saudi Arabia.
Well, the two are intertwined. And so there it is. Yet the Saudis are, of course, funding them. Qatar is funding them. And all these Emirates are giving them money and stuff like that to establish this caliphate. And, boy, I think Angry said it one night about chickens coming home to roost. But that's just my personal reflection. And that's about all I can say as far as an opinion is concerned. I really do. I mean, they have cells all over this country. And, you know, this lady who was supposedly, according to the for-profit media, had convinced her husband to do these things and stuff like that. I don't know. It's just one hell of a mess, that's for damn sure. But it's far from being over. And I heard today that we don't have enough bombs to drop on them. Well, I guess people will have to just generate some more bombs. I don't know what they're going to do.
Yeah, well, I got to figure. Drop all you want. We'll make more.
Well,
that just means that the bomb manufacturer stock is going to go up because they know they're going to get some more government welfare. Some of that socialism that they like, but we can't have any of.
Yeah, the contracts and stuff like that, they're just incredible. And, of course, the House is talking about not funding the government. They're going to present another resolution. And I do believe that the president has said he will not sign it.
No. I mean, the Senate finally got around to passing the Affordable Care Act repeal. The House will act on it. It will go to the president's desk, and unless he has completely taken leave of his senses, he will veto it. Frankly, I would be thrilled to death if he would instead of vetoing it, walk it out onto the White House lawn and pee all over it.
Well, do you not think when Obama is gone, and if it's if there should be a Republican in the White House, that Obamacare will be gone?
No, I don't. Because there's too many parts of it that are working too well for too many people.
Well, you talked about the insurance companies. I know what you're talking about. But
I'm talking about people who are able to get insurance now who couldn't because they had pre-existing conditions. I'm talking about the millions of Americans, even though it's not national like it was supposed to be. I'm talking about the millions of people who they're working their asses off. They're working Americans, but they couldn't afford health insurance and they're not making much money. And they can now get health insurance through the Medicaid expansion in states like West Virginia and Kentucky.
Well, you know,
and Ohio even.
A part of Obamacare. So who knows? I hope you're right. I hope you're right. But nonetheless, that's all I have to say. And it's on this Pearl Harbor Day, I just wanted to honor your father and his service in that boiler room because I sure as hell would not have wanted to been there.
Scary place. Thank you, Jim. I appreciate it.
All right. Take care.
Bye now. Jim calling from not too terribly far from here at all. All right. Let's wrap this up with a nomination for some more ends. In the sixth grade at the Williamsbridge School, PS 89 in New York City. It was just a couple of days after the attacks in Paris. It was November the 19th when a group of sixth grade boys got hold of a little sixth grade girl. I probably don't even need to mention the fact that she is Muslim. And proceeded to put her in a headlock and punch her repeatedly and try to rip off her headgear. Here's the best part. After she was attacked at this school in the Bronx, the police were called. When the police arrived, they stood around for a little bit and then did not even bother to file a report. And of all, look, it's Merca now, okay?
The greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever, amen, indivisible, under God.
And who knows where the journalism's going to come from. In this case, it came from Inside Edition. The Department of Education there in New York City says that we are committed to promoting safe and supportive environments and a community of inclusion in all DOE schools. Boys will be boys. Sometimes they're just going to put little Muslim girls in headlocks and punch them in the face and try to take their headgear off. Yeah, If tomorrow all the crap I had disappeared, I love America. Never mind, Lee Greenwood, go to hell. And so you okay? Well, you know, maybe the schools did something about the little boys that punched her in the face, put her in a headlock, and called her ISIS and tried to tear away her headgear. The disciplinary hearing is described as being on hold while the parents of the boys lawyer up. Go figure. This is your America. This is the country that we're supposed to get all misty-eyed about every 4th of July, right? I guess. And then, not too awfully far away, because let's just wrap all this hateful crap up in one great big bow. There's a lot of loathsome people in the United States. Baggers, birchers, ninthers, deathers, tenthers, birthers, booger eaters. But there's an especially loathsome bunch, and that's the so-called Sandy Hook truthers. Vicky Soto was murdered at Sandy Hook. But the Sandy Hook truthers are so vicious and so hateful and so just pig-eyed mean that they've come after her sister. Her sister, Carly Soto. And they have recently published all of her information. They've doxed her. They've sent messages to her husband. They're coming after you. The truth is out. They know who you and your wife are. They know where you live. You think you won't be questioned for the actions you do? God watches all. Because they've declared that Vicky Soto's sister is a crisis actor, and they're convinced that they've seen her at the scenes of other mass shootings. Last month, a creep by the name of Matthew Mills was arrested for haranguing Vicky Soto's younger sister Jill at a charity event in Vicky's memory. The mothers of the murdered children have been harassed. And now they're terrorizing the sister and brother-in-law of one of the victims. And they, these Sandy Hook truthers, are scum. Pure, plain, and simple. 2 minutes before the hour and time to get out of here. Thanks, everybody, for participating in the conversation this evening. Thanks for your calls, your emails, your tweets, your Facebook posts. Thank you for those of you who just sit and listen, or cook dinner and listen, or however you listen, however you participate. Thank you. Whether live or via the podcast, thank you. That's how the community is created. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.